No, I liked it, but I thought it was a good place to end. No, I that's interesting.
The morality of interest. So what? They're groups. And this is one of the things that honestly gets into anti-Semitism, strangely enough, because people of the Jewish faith embrace interest because they're good at math. I gave up about years ago. I like to lead in with a no context comments because they make me smile when I'm editing.
Because you're like, oh, what?
Because then I'm looking
at the
30 minutes of us talking about dumb shit and it makes me smile at the beginning.
If you hate this, this can be the last one.
I don't hate it. I just wish we didn't talk for 30 full fucking minutes.
Well, you don't have to. I never listen to the full thing of Sickle and Ifrit when I tag it. Because I have all the topics we talked about on a sheet that I type while I...
Oh, wow. You actually give a shit, huh? So, what I'm hearing is you give a shit about that podcast.
I can do it right now. This is my podcast where I get to relax and be myself.
Oh.
And not have to assume a persona.
Got it.
For a while, I mean, I could do it if you want. For a while, it was me running, like, all the other Ethernet stuff. But, you know, when you don't pay your writers, they don't stick around, it turns out. So.
Yeah, even if you do pay them.
Yeah,
sometimes they're bitches. Oh, I was really quiet last time because I was trying to not cough into the microphone. I should stay engaged.
So, I mean, Joe had something you want to talk about, but he's not here. Kevin probably would have had something to talk about, but he's not here. What are you thinking about right now?
Well, I would like to not talk about... I'd like to talk about something besides video games for a little bit.
Oh, sure, yeah. I mean, I think we get pulled into that because two of the other people that...
Well, no, I can tell you exactly what happened, which is...
Dead Cells.
Kevin brought up Dead Cells once. And then I was like, cool, I should play that. And then I brought up Dead Cells because I was playing it. And then Joe brought up Dead Cells because he was playing it. So each one of us just had a sequential love affair with that game. And we had to share our experiences over and over again.
Yeah.
And then no one...
I see what you're saying.
Kevin and I aren't going to... Or Joe aren't going to say no to that conversation because it's fucking rad.
Yeah.
But having said that, it's getting repetitive even tagging it. So how about that coronavirus?
I mean, I think we could talk about coronavirus if you want. We kind of did we already do that in one of them?
No, we referenced that. I was talking about it before, but we didn't mention that I was. We didn't actually talk about it on the cast.
There's like I feel like
the I've cast seen... is short for podcast.
Oh, I see. Yeah. I feel like I've seen a lot of different people. I mean, this is the same. Okay, anything we're going to talk about with this virus is going to be stuff that people do for everything. But we're probably just going to be referencing it with respect to coronavirus because it's happening now. 1,000 cases, 30 dead. That's like the majority of the U.S., isn't it?
Yeah.
30 dead? Are you texting?
Off by a million.
I'm talking.
I was listening.
I'm just kidding. Yeah,
just
but
by
like
off by a factor of a million.
I think I think in my opinion is a really good, obviously it's my fucking opinion, sorry, is that a lot of people are taking information that seems, what is the word? Like you're fear-mongering. It's a lot of information that seems very like scary, I guess is the right word, but there's a better word for it. And just kind posting that. Yeah. And just posting the small stuff instead of like trying to talk about the global, like the larger picture of like how the fact that like, this isn't like crazy more contagious than any of the other epidemics we've had as far as like how it transmutes,
yeah.
And that the death rate for this virus amongst 80-year-olds is 14%, and that's a number that is up for question anyway because of how it's diagnosed and how it's tested for, and like how the majority of people that have been like the vast majority of people who have been diagnosed with COVID have not actually, they've recovered, they're fine.
Yeah,
they're absolutely fine.
Like, right.
And so it took me, I was really freaking out about it, especially since like I had to go to the hospital the other day.
Right.
And like I was like, oh man, hospitals.
That's the place you get sick.
Yeah. Which is weird because, I mean, I think generally you don't get sick when you go to hospitals.
That's the place where all the sick people are.
Yeah. But because they practice all the things they're telling, the CDC is telling people to practice now.
Sure.
They don't necessarily get sick as much. Anyway, I was like all triggered by it. And I saw people freaking out about it. And then I started to look into it. Like, you should always do, if you're scared about something, is, like...
Research
and try to learn about it yourself. And thanks to Amy. Shout out to Amy, because she helped me calm down a little bit, too. And started looking at what people were posting about it. And it's just straight up scare. Like, if people are just scared, and it's like...
Well, and they're panicking. That's all it is. Panic. It's just panic. Panic. At
panic
the disco reflex. Or otherwise. And
panic of the virus?
Yeah. Disco virus. Don't go to discos.
No.
That's a good way to get sick.
Yeah, it is.
So I don't know, it's
weird how much people are freaking out about it. I think it's also a fundamental misunderstanding of virology, immunology, and statistics, which are also places that most people suck.
It's, you know, and I guess after our conversation with our coworker last week, I kind of overestimate, again, I overestimate the amount of knowledge people have on general stuff, even when it comes to like how things are transmitted, what like someone asks you, like, well, I thought I got immunized against the flu once, like, do I need to get immunized again?
It's like,
yeah, because
it doesn't work that way.
And I don't know, like, because to me it makes a lot of sense. You're talking about how the, because evolutionary trends are always generally closely related to lifespan. If you have a shorter lifespan, you generally can see changes over generations faster. So, yeah. Like, not that you have more evolutionary trends there. You can just visualize them better in like, things that only live for, like, a day or two or, like, a year or something like that, right? Because the generation of a human is 100 years and... Let's say 80.
The reproduction generation, remember. It's not the lifespan. It's the reproductive generation.
No, but like... But yeah, so I guess you like think of 50 max, maybe?
Probably 20s.
You think 20s?
I mean, what are you measuring?
Well, I'm just saying, like, for a generation to be a generation.
Meaning a group can then have an offspring, which would then continue? Because that's a generation.
Yeah, I guess
that's
true.
If you're talking about viruses...
Yeah.
Then you're talking about one...
No, you're right. It's probably more like 2030.
2030. Yeah. So that's a generational.
So it's even still, though, like, that's a lot longer than what you get with, like, flies. That's why flies are, like, they use flies and bacteria for a lot of, like, studies you're doing in college when you want to study introducing a gene into a bacterial cell. Like,
right.
You can see it in a matter of days. Yeah. Like, you can see something surviving an antibiotic or something surviving
antibacterial stuff.
Antibacterial things. And that's kind of like, I feel like that's one of those things that I think a lot of people are trying to educate more on, but it's just hard to get people to watch kind of videos like that on YouTube.
Well, a lot of people already think they know stuff, too.
That's true.
And not everyone who's trying to educate people are correct, either. Because there are lots of different, like, ways of abstracting concepts that are more or less accurate and that are also potentially misleading, because there's also still a lot of mystery in this science. Like, our understanding of the immune system is not complete.
Mm-mm.
By any stretch. It's very, very, we have a lot of stuff about it, but there's certain characteristics they still don't really understand. Like, how come certain immune responses, like, what was it, measles and some of the other ones, go away, but they take longer than other things? But it's not necessarily a different strain. It's that your body, like, fucking forgets.
Or, like, with herpes and things like that. And
right.
I don't know, maybe that's more well understood, but the whole idea of, like, it never leaves, but it isn't always active.
The thing about herpes, from the stuff I was reading, at least, about it, is that it actually exists in your nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
So the virus digs its way into your nervous system where your blood can't reach it. So your immune system can't stop it. And so it exists in a semi-dormant state until it gets activated by something, and then that causes it to flow down your neurosystem to wherever your herpes.
And that's the kind of weird, like, part too about viruses, is that, like, trying to understand, like, why and how they function, because it's so different than attributing it to, like, other life, you know? Because I guess technically, if you're going to get on the nitty gritty, viruses aren't alive.
Viruses are in the asterisk category.
Yeah, they like, they're, I don't remember all of the basic, like, you know, middle school biology stuff that they teach you about.
They don't have,
like, how to define life, but
DNA. They only have RNA.
They don't have, yeah. Again, I don't remember all the stuff, but
it's something about how they don't reproduce by, not mitosis. Mitosis.
Yeah.
It's the splitting one.
Meiosis is the one where you, anyway, again, that's why I don't remember.
Yeah, they don't split like single celled organisms. They don't sexually reproduce like
injecting each other with DNA, basically, is what sexual reproduction
is
for
the same species, right?
So, I mean, depends.
They don't really move. Like, they don't move on their own. Like, it's like any of the. It starts to get weird because when you're getting into life, is one of those things where it's really easy to see it, but it's almost impossible to define it.
That's what I think. I was going to lead back to the whole idea of, like, education, because, like, you're not wrong when you say that you, like, people could be wrong, but that's why you don't just educate yourself from one place.
Yeah.
Anyway, but also the fact that, like, if you start thinking about stuff too much, or if you start learning about a lot of stuff in biology, it comes down to this idea of, like, you start thinking about your body and how it works and how freaky it is that a human is actually able to function, that, like,
it's insane.
Every chemical, and it's just as scary as, like, learning about your nothingness in the vast space and all the things that are
every system in your body. It's all of the other living creatures in your body.
Yeah.
You, from literally the moment you're born, start collecting microorganisms that are symbiotic with you.
Mm-hmm.
And you keep them in you forever. If you ever get rid of them all, you'll die.
Yeah.
It's like, huh. So I'm not so much a unique, individual, discrete living creature as much as I am an autonomous, self-piloted colony of nightmare fuel.
Yeah, exactly. And
humanity.
But I think that the general consensus is that a lot of these scientific concepts lead to places that can be a little bit scary if you choose to think about it that way.
If you start mixing your philosophies with your other scientific disciplines, then yeah, we're into problems fast.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, which one of those microorganisms is the self?
I wasn't even talking about that, but that's a good point. Like, when you start, attributing those kinds of ideas to, then we can get into clone logic. Which one is the clone?
Well, then clone logic is interesting because then you start talking about contiguous consciousness,
mm-hmm.
but you don't have that, so...
Uh-oh.
Because you're asleep.
But it's kind of... I guess the general message here was, if you're scared about something, try to educate yourself on it because it can help you. And I mean, this isn't like a life lessons podcast, so fuck me if I'm overstepping. But try to learn about stuff before you're afraid of it.
Knowledge tends to drive away fear. Asterisk.
Just like fire tends to drive away werewolves.
Yeah. Sure.
You don't agree? Come on, this is basic werewolf science.
I don't think any of those words you just said go together.
But damn. So what do you want to talk about now?
I didn't realize how much of a catalyst Kevin and Joe were.
Maybe.
We've kind of gotten used to them over the years.
I'm trying to think of topics. I think...
That's the thing. I marked one in the chat. We should talk about that. And then,
but it was it was a video game one, wasn't it? That's why I thought it was. We should talk.
It was a video game one. It was about video game movies. But Joe has a lot of very strong opinions on that.
Double Dragon. You guys wanted to talk about Double Dragon.
Yeah, but
I've only seen it about once.
Because he's a fucking huge-ass fan where he knows the story of Double Dragon. Who the fuck knows there's a story of Double Dragon?
I didn't know
Joe
that.
Joe did.
Yeah. You did?
No, Joe did.
Joe did.
Yeah. I don't even think there was that much of a story.
Tribute podcast to Joe and
Kevin. This is just a tribute. You gotta believe it. And I wish Joe were here.
I was going to see
Joe.
I wish you were Joe. I was Joe.
I wish Joe were you.
Shit. I was going to go see Dragon Force tonight because I really like Dragon Force because they're pretty consistent in how they do their music and I enjoy it.
Yeah.
But.
Are they tired of playing that one song everyone knows them for yet?
Yeah, probably. Kevin bailed because he has a recital for Patrick.
Yeah.
So good luck, Patrick, if you ever listen to this podcast when you're older.
We wished you luck the day before you did the thing, but you wouldn't have ever heard it less than a week after.
The luck is in the universe now. I've given my soul, and the luck is out there.
Yeah, the luck particles. Yeah.
The luck particles. Oh, God, coronavirus can affect luck particles.
They're up there with the rights particles.
So I this is my first experience in trying to sell a ticket. Have you ever tried to sell a ticket to something before?
No.
So I went onto StubHub, and I went to go sell this ticket, but there's no other tickets out there. And so I came across this conundrum of how do I price a ticket? Because in my mind, if people want to see it and there's no tickets available and it's sold out,
the value ostensibly has gone up.
And is it my duty to be a good is it so this is where a kind of little different little moral system comes in, right? Do you make money off of things? And this is that we've talked about the D&D morality system before, and I kind of use my money making and how you're making it and the reasons behind it as a good justification for setting yourself up in a system that way. Because if you my idea is if you don't ask for anything extra or you don't ask for anything at all, you're in the good category of things because you're doing things that don't have any monetary value associated with them. And then again, I will fully admit that this is part of the society that I've been grown up in and blah, blah, blah. But if you get money and take it but don't ask for more or ask for maybe a little bit more since you encountered ever other things along the way of that journey that you were doing that quest for, it's potentially okay and not evil or good to ask for more money. But where do you cross the line of being ethically not wrong, that's not the right word. What's the ethical line in asking for too much money?
Which construct do you subscribe to?
I don't know. That's the thing. I don't know the constructs.
Well, there are a couple of different concepts. One is that
You have value that you put into the ticket by acquiring it and holding on to it. That's a pretty weak one in this context because you didn't necessarily, like, labor theory of value would suggest you didn't put a lot of labor into it, but the labor theory of value is basically stupid, so I don't know if there's any value there. You did expend some of your time and energy to get it, though, and your opportunity cost was such that you sunk cash into it at an earlier date, which means that's cash you didn't have available. So you're practically giving a loan to whoever ends up buying it later at the date. So ultimately, you could view that as essentially interest on a short-term loan and associate your morals with that.
So then you'd be like asking the question of what's too much interest to charge?
I mean, that's a perspective is interest on the time because someone waited the last minute to get a ticket.
What would be the line in the first example you gave? Like the moral, the ethical line first that the one where you're like, well, you ostensibly have some value.
You put effort into it. So the amount of effort, the amount of labor you put into it.
So it'd be like, how much are you paying me for my labor?
Essentially, okay, yeah. You'd be defining your labor as having intrinsic value, which is demonstrably untrue, but whatever.
But if you ascribe to that theory, the question you're asking yourself is, how much is my time worth?
Essentially.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the second question is, how much interest should I charge?
Because your money could have been doing other things.
Yes.
In
okay.
that time period.
So you have to then equate it to what you could have used the $20 for, or what you would have been willing to use it for. Okay.
And then the opportunity cost in general, which is the amount of effort you're putting into buying and selling and maintaining these tickets. So like that stuff you could have been doing elsewhere. So that's like an inversion of the labor theory of value, which is like I could be doing other things.
And that's part of the second one.
It's kind of. Sort of a rearticulation of it. Okay. A lot of these overlap. And then you could also just straight up seller's market. It's worth what someone's willing to pay, not a dollar more.
And then the ethical question you're asking yourself is, is there a limit? Is it always just like, if someone bought it, then it wasn't bad?
Ultimately, that would be that's that construct. The quote-unquote unbridled capitalism, which is... Well, except you don't have control over the market. You're just an individual seller here. But if somebody really wants to go see that show and they want to pay you $1,000 to go see it, then they can do that.
Then the set market value set at $1,000 for that transaction.
Yes.
And then...
And if somebody else wants to go to that show but only wants to pay you $1, then they don't get to go.
Yeah,
right. And that's considered unfair by some, but it's also...
But again, I'm not the only person in this market. So yep. if I do $1,000 and someone buys it, people could try to charge that, but the rest of... And it goes back... I mean, I'm talking about demand supply for that.
In essential microcosm?
Yeah.
It's pretty pure.
Yeah.
Like, supply and demand. There are a few confounders, right?
So, back to the first two or three, you're talking about opportunity cost versus labor cost, is there any kind of ethical boundary you cross when you charge... When you ask too much for your own labor? Like, how do you define that? And is there anything, like, inherently... evil in terms of like what you would associate with an alignment chart in terms of charging.
I mean, it's purely subjective as to how much your labor is worth, right?
Sure, but I'm asking you to come up with maybe a scenario or think about a scenario where like you could see someone as being like not good or evil in terms of asking.
If you attempt to assert that your labor is worth substantially more than you could ever actually get anywhere else, that's going to be, I consider, immoral.
So effectively lying about your worth to everybody else but you. Okay.
But that's from my lens, right? Mm-hmm. Other people say might be what your time is worth more than this because it's your free time, which is worth more than your work time because you have less of it or something.
Sure, okay. Yeah, so, well, I'm obviously asking for your opinion.
Well, I mean, my opinion is sell them for whatever you can fucking get them for.
Yeah.
Because that's your prerogative.
I mean, your opinion on an example. Like, I understand.
On the morality of it, like, it just really depends on the lens, right? Like, if you believe... that your time is worth something, in that you're from an opportunity cost standpoint, even from a labor theory cost, anytime you're doing anything, you're not doing everything else.
Yeah.
By definition. And so when you're attempting to equate the value of that to like a dollar value, it's hard to pin it down. Because like, let's say for argument's sake, right now you make $50 an hour to be here. And that doesn't mean though that every hour of the day is worth $50 because you're only working, let's say, 40 hours a week here.
So the activity, what you do during those hours actually helps define what you get paid for those hours.
Well, it's 40 hours while you're working here, so theoretically we should only be doing things relating to working here while you're here. Not counting this thing we're doing right now. But like on Sunday, though, your hour isn't worth $50 because no one's going to give you $50 for an hour of work on Sunday. Unless someone does.
Yeah.
Like if you take on another job, but that other job might pay you $20 an hour or $70 an hour. And so all of a sudden... during that time, that's the value of that time.
Sure, okay.
But if you don't have a job, then the value of your time is zero.
Is that more in line with the labor theory? Or both.
That's more like a...
Like a general idea. Middle there. Okay.
The labor theory of value is that I spent X amount of time making this thing, ergo this thing is worth X times my time amount.
Got it.
Hours.
Okay, so it's very, very arithmetic in how it's calculated.
Yep. It doesn't really make sense either because you can start getting into a lot of stuff. Like a diamond ring doesn't take as much time to make as a mud pie.
Like a, yeah, or like
a lot of time
rocking
on.
Horse made of regular wood or something.
Right, but like, for example, I can crank out a website probably 4 times as fast as you can. And it might actually look better because I have more experience and more technical understanding
sure.
that kind of stuff. Does that mean I should charge 1/4 of what you would charge?
Yeah, because I want to make more than you.
Right.
Okay, got it. That's right. So that's right.
So the labor theory of value is missing certain
So factors. Then if we go over to the other one where we're talking about opportunity cost versus like bank loan / interest paid kind of idea, is there are there any follies in the ethical constructs surrounding opportunity cost?
Well, with the opportunity, like that's kind of what we're talking about with this here is like opportunity cost in the context of what you're doing. You're making a choice to do one thing or the other, right? And you chose to buy that ticket, but you're not doing anything with your time between when you bought the ticket and when you choose to sell the ticket. Those are two actions that have time associated with them, but the rest of the time you're not doing anything. You're not putting any effort into this, so it doesn't really figure into it. So ultimately, from that standpoint, there's not going to be a lot of value associated with it because you're not putting a lot of time into it.
Is there opportunity associated with the experience you're getting from selling the thing?
I mean, everything that you're doing is an opportunity cost. So, like, I'm saying the buying of the ticket and then the time it takes to go sell the ticket, do the business transaction to get rid of it.
Low opportunity
cost. Constitutes opportunity cost. But
okay.
It's not as much as, say, digging a hole.
Okay.
But having said that, there's also something to be said for your money. There are a lot of things you can be doing with your money at any given time.
Like, I could have put that $20 into an investment. I could have bought, like, 3 Magic cards that might appreciate in value.
I could have done any number of things. And you chose. So your opportunity cost of your money is where you chose to spend it on this instead of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could theoretically say, well, I could have made X amount if I had put it into blah, right?
Is that how interest is usually calculated?
Interest is calculated based off what you can get away with.
Okay. So the moral line on interest is not getting people to not participate in your business model
anymore.
There are
large numbers of religious groups that call interest immoral, fundamentally.
Interesting.
No.
Well, it's
not
interesting.
Interest.
And that's where we're going to leave it, folks.
No. Really?
I mean, you wanted...
No.
It's a shorter podcast.
Fine. It's obvious that that was important to you to disregard me on that one.
No, I liked it, but I thought it was a good place to end. No, I that's interesting.
The morality of interest. So what? They're groups. This is one of the things that honestly gets into anti-Semitism, strangely enough, because people of the Jewish faith embrace interest because they're good at math. No, I mean
is that the anti-Semitic part?
No. It's that people hate. Like moneylenders, and that's why a lot of financial institutions are like stereotypically framed as Jewish because they understand how interest works, especially specifically compound interest.
But that's just tables and annuitization, and there's all that stuff.
Yes,
involved.
But you're talking about a time period in a culture
Got
where
it.
No one understood that
Sorry.
Or chose to understand.
Yeah,
it.
Yeah.
And so they're just
not
making
now,
money from nothing.
Back in the day.
But you're making money from nothing. You're ripping me off. And it's like, oh, well, we took a risk. We gave you money, and then you have to give us that money back. But we gave you that money in that time period. We could have been doing other things with that money, and that's sort of one of the justifications. But ultimately, it boils down to you need this money at what percent do you need this money? 3%, 5%, 10%? You need this money 10%. Like, if you really need it, you'll eat the interest because you need the money now.
Which goes back into the whole kind of calculation of opportunity cost, not opportunity cost, but deciding how much you're willing to pay for something.
And ultimately, there, where it boils down to is as long as there are competing banks, I would say that it's moral because at least then they're fighting. When there's one sole bank, like the Federal Reserve, it makes it really hard to do that because they control the wealth and the interest rates. If there's only one pile of money and you only have one person you can talk to get at it, then they can say, yeah, interest is 100%. Fuck off. And you're like, well, I guess I can't borrow money.
I guess everything that I have to do has to be from those cows that I rose.
But like right now, we have competing banks. Ultimately, we kind of don't because of the prime mortgage, prime lending and whatnot.
And FDIC and stuff like that too.
It gets weird, yeah. But ultimately we have an illusion of competitive banks where theoretically I choose between this lender, that lender, the other lender, and they all want my business. So they can't just all choose to set their rates at 100% because then someone else will come along and be like, I'll give you 5 and then I won't flock to that guy because it's like, that's
and
way better.
That concept right there is just a general like
markets,
market.
Yeah.
It's just understanding how markets work.
As long as it's free. which is where the ticket thing is. You're in free, largely unregulated market here, so you can have that competition.
Yeah,
if there's five tickets for sale and you want to charge $1,000 and everyone else is charging $10, you're never going to fucking sell that ticket.
Yeah, and other places where, like, yeah, you're right. And so then you get back into the whole idea of, like, what defines a free market, blah, 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 blah.
I would say that lending industry is not a free market now, but
there's not a lot of them that exist.
It's very difficult to enter the market.
Yeah.
It's really easy to control the market right now, and you have to go through student hoops, and it all gets touched by the federal government or the agencies that are not strictly considered part of the federal government but still behave as if they are, like the Federal Reserve, which is not an actual federal entity at all. It's completely private but has been selected by the federal government to do all banking.
So the moral of the story is, if you want to prevent yourself from getting coronavirus, sell your tickets at the best price possible.
And trust the Jews, but don't trust the government.
And always research things.
Wait.
Including the Jews.
I'm sorry.